Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls or tolerate sponsors. And I have a bit of a runny nose, so you'll have to bear with me. I hope it doesn't get in the way, my nose and all. But I wanted to start. Where do I want to start? It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. But should I start with the Olympics? I didn't even know the Olympics were happening until there was this deluge of really perverse and disturbing news from the opening ceremonies. I wasn't aware that the Olympics was still a thing. It is, apparently. The Olympics opened in Paris with a ceremony rivaling anything ever held by the Canaanites or the Philistines or the King of Sodom or anybody like that. And the opening festivities were greeted by, oddly enough, an orgy of violence, arson, and sabotage by left-wing maniacs. So I will not be attending the Olympics. As I discovered they were happening, all I could think of was, I mean, and I don't want to laugh because it won't be pretty, but rarely has there been such an obvious target for political violence dangled in front of all the maniacs in the world all at one time. And at a time when there are no men capable of defending themselves there. So it's like a bunch of, it's almost like the festival in the Negev in Israel. It's almost like that festival on October 7th. It's just a big target just hanging there with no defense whatsoever. And every maniac in the world's got their eye on it. And so I didn't buy any tickets. I will not be heading over there. I will not be trying to get on the train before it blows up or crashes. And I don't recommend attending, by the way. All right. And by the way, a note to the Daily Wire and others. You don't need to show the dirty pictures of the Olympics opening ceremony. You could just describe them as a cross between Sodom and Satan worship, and we know what that is. We know what they are. We know what it looks like. And by showing those pictures and putting those pictures up so that unsuspecting people, when they open their browser, there's the picture of what happened in Paris. By doing that, you are participating in the very humiliation ritual that you condemn in your article. That's for Matt Walsh and the other Catholic guy over there. So, I mean, I appreciate your sentiment, but showing the pictures is not helpful. Because, well, do I even need to go on? All right, so from there, a little bit of good news. You may remember that I had predicted that the resignation of Claudine Gay over at Harvard for her plagiarism of cringeworthy woke material. It's like she's writing her PhD dissertation on some woke topic, and she's so dumb she had to steal other people's woke stupidity to put it in. So anyway, I thought, this is it. Even the left can't let Claudine Gay get away with this. It's just too embarrassing for everyone. So I predicted at that time that we may have achieved peak woke, at least for this wave of woke, this latest wave. On that front, we have a story from New York. The Dateline is New York from CNN. CNN reports that as recently as February, Tractor Supply, known for selling animal feed, yada, 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 told investors that climate change was a significant threat to its business. Any delay or failure to meet its goals of cutting emissions could hurt public perception of our business, employee morale, customer and stockholder support. And it could affect our financial performance. Climate change, said a document released by Tractor Supply. They also warned as recently as February that Tractor Supply could suffer business consequences if it did not meet its five-year diversity, equity, and inclusion plan. And increase spending on more diverse suppliers. And boost representation of people of color at manager levels and above at the company by a certain percentage point. It's all in a document that they released back in February. At which time, if CNN had reported on it, they would have reported that it was a great move forward in the history of business. And That's right. Back then, the CEO of Tractor Supply said that climate change and DEI initiatives make great business sense for Tractor Supply. But now, CNN reports, as of last week, Tractor Supply has decided that all of those risks are now worth ignoring. The company has announced that it will withdraw its carbon emissions reduction goals and eliminate jobs and goals focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Altogether, it's going to stop sponsoring LGBTQ pride festivals and voting campaigns, as well as it's going to stop submitting data to the Human Rights Campaign, which is one of the biggest gay mafia organizations on the planet. And that's the bottom line of the story, is that the management at Tractor Supply previously had a gun to their head held by the Human Rights Campaign. And Human Rights Campaign somehow managed to scare every business in the country and working on every private business in the world, scaring them into thinking if they don't go gay, that I don't know. I think they were probably threatening to actually kill them, because I can't imagine how you go along with this unless you're just a total vacuous coward focused only on money, which might be what most of the CEOs perched atop American industry are at this point. Just vacuous, empty, hollow men. And the guy at Tractor Supply was so scared that if he didn't bend the knee to the gay mafia, and then he looked around, Claudine Gay resigned. He took a breath and he said, I think it's over. And they dropped it all immediately, 100% all of it. They stopped all of it. And so CNN is lamenting the fact that Tractor Supply has been dragged back into the days of the Neanderthal. And so CNN's quite upset about that. I could go on, but I won't. Anyway, another sign that we may have indeed achieved peak woke, at least for the moment. But since most of this most recent wave of woke has been driven from within the halls of government, the government will be the last to realize that the woke wave is over. That's right. I have a report here from the State Department, reported by the Federalist. The State Department, by the way, is the bureaucracy within the American government tasked with dealing with foreign governments. So just in case you don't know, the State Department, it's full of communists, deviants, perverts, queers, and weirdos, like almost every department in the government at this point. In fact, in 2021, Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Blinken is the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State is Blinken. The head of the Secret Service is Cheatham. And we got Blinken and Cheatham and Biden. Biden and Blinken and Cheatham. You can't make this up. It's like a joke poem joke. Anyway. In 2021, Secretary of State Antony Blinken established an Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion led by a new Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer. That's a CDIO. And Secretary Blinken also devised an equity action plan to redirect U.S. diplomacy. Now, Anthony Blinken didn't actually do any of that. Well, except create the office and put one of his friends in there, one of his donors or his daughter's hapless boyfriend. I don't know who got that job. So he did that. But he didn't devise an equity action plan. He just cut and pasted it from the Human Rights Campaign, who didn't have to put a gun to Blinken's head because Blinken was already on his knees when he came in the room. And so that was going on. And then 2021 was the wave was cresting. The woke wave crested and washed over the nation for the better part of 3 years. And just this past week, the State Department, the USAID Joint Regional Strategy claims, well, still on their website, they claim that systematic inequality is a national security threat. That's on their website. And it reads just like that. It reads as if a really terrified teenage girl wrote it. And someone could tell Anthony Blinken that it's okay, he can get up off his knees, but he doesn't want to. Anthony Blinken's quite comfortable right there, right where he is. All right, now, speaking of all that and the fall of America, which is just, it is, at least it's slow. I've been reading through the book of Jeremiah and Isaiah, and observing how the captivity of Israel happened, the fall of Jerusalem. And the captivity actually took place over quite a while. It was a process, a process of collapse and embarrassment and enslavement and killing and starvation. And then it gets really, really bad. But it takes a little while. It's not like overnight. So that's what it's like here. It's just a painful, embarrassing experience watching the collapse of a once half decent nation. You know, I mean, forget France. I mean, you see the Olympic, or you hear about, hopefully you only hear about the opening ceremonies at the Olympics, and you realize that Europe has fallen. Europe has fallen and will probably erupt into some sort of convulsion of violence and bloodshed and death and murder and hatred that will rival all of those throughout all of history. That's probably on the horizon, on the near horizon for Europe. But meanwhile, here in America, the Central Command commander, a general named Michael Correa, has written a letter to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. Remember him, the disappearing defense secretary? Still, nobody even asks about that anymore. Anyway, are we allowed to even bring up? This is the guy who disappeared for like a week and nobody knew where he was. And he popped back up and said he had a sore neck or something like that. For all we know, he went to China and downloaded everything he had. For all we know. Anyway, Michael Correa, the general, U.S. Central Command commander, has written a letter to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. And in the letter, he says that military operations to keep the Red Sea open are failing. Failing. He used the word failing. Lloyd Austin had to have someone go look that up for him because he doesn't even know what that means. And they came back and they told Lloyd, they said, this is not good. This is the actual general, the commander of Central Command says we are failing. And General Correa predicted in his warning to Lloyd Austin that U.S. service members will die if we continue going this way. And that's the end of the story. There's really nothing more to it. It's just that's the first shoe dropping. Yeah, on this particular story. So just stand by because there's no evidence anywhere that Lloyd Austin has any idea what he should do when he's told that the operation is failing, troops are going to die, and Lloyd Austin is just barely able to look up over Anthony Blinken's head as they both appear there on their knees. Hey! Everybody! Look out! Run me up, I'm on my own. Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for tuning in. We go from the knees of Anthony Blinken and Lloyd Austin. We go to the politics file where we check in with Donald Trump circa 2014. Now, this would have been 2 years before Donald Trump announced that he was the conservative savior of evangelical America. 2 years. So, 2014. And Donald Trump made three donations to the Kamala Harris Attorney General reelection campaign. That's right. Now, he had already donated $5,000 to Kamala Harris in 2011. Is it Kamala? Kamala? I don't want to mispronounce that. Kamala. We just shorten it with Camel. Trump donated $5,000 to Camel in 2011, her initial campaign to become the first black African, black communist attorney general of California, something like that. And then in order for her to become the first black African, black Caribbean, Indian communist to be reelected, Trump donated three times a few grand apiece there in 2014. That was obviously before Donald Trump had the epiphany that when he realized that he could probably win as a Republican. Trump also donated to Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, one of the most hysterical, radical, froth-at-the-mouth, communist, baby-killing perverts in the Congress. He donated to her a couple times. Donald Trump also, before he had his epiphany, donated to the re-election campaign of Senator Joe Biden back in 2001. So, anyway, who is this? Fox News, left-wing media outlet Fox News, reports this as if this is an awkward thing for Kamala. How is she going to defend the fact that the guy she now calls Hitler and Satan donated to her campaign? That's not awkward for Kamala. She has no shame. And she'll just say that Donald Trump was a communist too back then. Or at least he was willing to support communists. Donald Trump, one thing I'll say about him, he's probably never been a communist. And he doesn't want to molest anybody's kids, so he's got that going for him. It's kind of a low bar, but, you know, you got to take what you can get these days. But you don't have to vote for it. In fact, that brings me to the message I received from Scott Powell. He is a columnist at townhall.com. And Scott Powell has my email because we're both conservatives in the media and we have conversed at times in the past. And because of that, I'm on his junk mail list. So he sends me, I get, whenever he publishes an article, I and a few thousand other people get it before it actually goes up on Town Hall. So the headline from Scott Powell in my email inbox read, Washington and Trump have a lot in common. Read my town hall piece. I'm Scott Powell, and we're friends, at least we're cordial, I should say, with one another. And so I clicked through on the piece. I started reading it, and I read through it, and I emailed Scott back, and I said, Scott, I thought for sure your article was going to be about the Washington, D.C. swamp culture and Donald Trump having a lot in common. I didn't realize you were talking about George Washington and Donald Trump. Boy, are you evangelicals gullible. It's no wonder the country your grandparents built is being taken from you. Sincerely, Doug. And then Scott wrote me back, which is unusual when you're on a junk mail list, but I'll give it to Scott. He checks his email. Scott Powell emails me back. Doug, I stand by every point I made, which were actually few and simple. George Washington and Donald Trump were/are one, men of faith. Two, men of great courage. Three, men of unusual persistence. And then Scott added the the obligatory statement of every evangelical being bamboozled. They have to say this. God has worked through many people who were not exemplars of godly virtue. And then they'll bring up Nebuchadnezzar and they'll bring up Cyrus. And they have their standard pat list. Now, Scott didn't bring up any of those specifically, but if I had I continued the discussion with him, I'm sure he would have pointed me to Nebuchadnezzar, or one of those. So, Scott, actually, I did continue the conversation with Scott because I read that, and the Trump is Trump and and Washington being men of faith struck me as a bit incongruous with actual history. And so I wrote back to Scott. I said, I apologize for my flippancy, Scott. You bring an important issue to bear. Regarding Donald Trump, courage and persistence he has in spades. It's the faith part I think you are mistaken on. Hear me out. And if my information is outdated, please correct me. I do not follow politics like I used to. And so, and then I quote from Donald Trump. When Donald Trump was asked if he'd ever asked God for forgiveness, he said, I am not sure I have. I'm not sure I have. I just go on and I try to do a better job from there. I don't think so. I think if I do something wrong, I think I just try and make it right. I don't bring God into that picture. I don't. I like to be good. I don't like to have to ask for forgiveness. And I am good. I don't do a lot of things that are bad. I try to do nothing that is bad. I have a great relationship with God. I have a great relationship with evangelicals. And then Trump goes on in that particular interview to quoting his poll numbers among evangelical voters. That was, I believe that was a BizPak review interview he did back in 2015 or possibly 16. So I quote that to Scott, and I said, Scott, by his own words, Donald Trump doesn't even understand how to come to faith, let alone possess faith. And there's further evidences of his damnation when he advocates for sin, which no believer should do. And then I linked to articles where Trump is an ally of child killers and sodomites. And then I pointed out that just last week, he allowed a craven Jezebel, a pervert who makes her living fornicating and promoting fornication, who actually has the mark of the beast tattooed across her forehead. He allowed her to make a speech at his convention. And then, Scott, he allowed Harmeet Dhillon to pray to what she was allowed to call our one true God. And then she mentioned a God who was not the one true God. It wasn't the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I can tell you that. I didn't recognize that God's name. So I linked to all these. And so I said, Scott, I judge that Trump is not a man of faith. And if I ever meet him or have the opportunity to communicate with him, I will warn him of his damnation. And I'll preach the gospel to him. Now, if I'm wrong, Scott, and Trump is a saved Christian, I've lost nothing. Just a little temporal face in that I was wrong. And Trump, he loses nothing at all if I'm wrong. Now, if you are wrong, Scott, then you and others in misjudging Donald Trump's rather obvious state of damnation and your responsibility and misjudge is being kind. Many so-called Christians closer to Trump are obviously lying to him. If you're failing in your responsibility to preach the gospel and call Donald Trump to repentance, now what has Donald Trump lost? She's lost everything. And so when he is condemned to hell on Judgment Day, which, by the way, Scott, is real, and it's coming very soon, you, Scott, will be held to account for your contribution to the eternal damnation of Donald Trump's soul. And then finally, I said, Scott, implying that God is using Trump is dangerous. My advice is never attribute anything to God except what he has already taken credit for in writing. Because if you're wrong, well, then you're blaspheming his name. And it's better to avoid even the possibility of doing that. I do love you, Scott, and Donald Trump. Sincerely, Doug. Scott has not replied. He did reply to my initial. He has not replied to that. And if he does, I'll read it on the air. And if he has an update for me where Donald Trump did ask God for forgiveness, did proclaim Jesus Christ had to die for his sins, then I'll amend my position appropriately. All right. And I hope that happens, by the way. I hope I have to amend that position. Because, like I say, Donald Trump does have courage. There's no, in fact, listen to this. This, and by the way, this story that I pulled down from the Liberty Daily, the story I'm about to read to you is confirmation that about 30% of everything you read is just fantastical making up of nothingness designed to keep you clicking on things and seeing ads. That's 30% of the news. On conservative websites, 30% of everything you see, the people who write it have no idea if anything they're saying is true. It's just designed to keep you clicking and keep you interested. Because this story floated around all week. Secret Service pushes Trump rallies indoors. That's right. According to multiple reports, and right there, according to multiple reports from multiple websites who need multiple clicks to sell multiple ads, according to multiple reports, the Secret Service has told President Trump to stop holding outdoor rallies. That's right. Not a surprise. There's big security risks, and they go on to gin out this story. And here, the part of this story that I happened to grab was one of the reasons the Secret Service is doing this, obviously, is because of the optics of the 2024 election. Kamala Harris won't be able to draw flies, and Donald Trump will be drawing these stadium-sized crowds outside. So they want to push Trump inside. It's election interference. And the stories came all week, dribbing and drabbing out. This is what the Secret Service says. Trump says this. Trump says he's going to... At the end of this article, it says, it appears the Trump campaign has agreed to accept the restriction from the Secret Service and move their rallies indoors. That was, I don't know, Thursday, maybe. And so, I don't know. That's like the army after George Washington got his great coat shot through as he rode his horse into battle. At the head of a battle, by the way. George Washington actually rode a horse into gunfire. At the end of the battle, there were holes in his jacket. And after that, the men in his army thought he was invincible. And, well, there's rumors that he thought that, too, because he thought God had providentially preserved him through the battle. And so when you've been shot and you live and people tell you that God has preserved you, it can go a long way to you defeating the greatest army in the history of the world, like George Washington did with the British. So this would have been akin to the administrative arm of the army back then telling George Washington to stop riding his horse into battle. There's too much risk involved, Mr. Washington. And so the Secret Service tells Donald Trump to go indoors. It's reported that he apparently accepts and has agreed. And then on Saturday morning it comes out, Trump releases in his own words, says he's not going indoors. In fact, what he's going to do is he's going to demand that the Secret Service increase their protective footprint in a bigly way. That's what Donald Trump is going to do. And so, like I said to Scott Powell, Donald Trump has courage. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt he has persistence. He's been acting like he's going to run for president for 20 years. And then he actually did, and he actually won. But it's the faith part This goes for all of you evangelicals pumping your fists with your MAGA hats, telling me that God is using Donald Trump, that God providentially preserved Donald Trump for a time such as this so that God can use him to save America. That's all well and good. We'll know more about that on the other side, but it's the faith part, and it's Donald Trump's eternal soul that's more important than any of that. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. We go from George Washington and Donald Trump riding through a hail of bullets into the Straight From Hell file. That's right. Now, you know, we have a Straight To Hell file where so many of the politicians, cultural, and civic leaders of our day dwell. But this is the Straight From Hell file, where Chuck Schumer has introduced a bill in the Senate that aims to protect children from dangerous online content. Chuck Schumer did. So color me skeptical that a guy who looks like the physical embodiment of Satan has introduced a bill to protect my children. Thank you, Chuck. I think I'll be all right. That's right. The legislation aims to... Well, what do we have? Two-thirds of the Senate... As soon as Chuck put the bill up, by the way, to protect children, two-thirds of the Senate signed on to it immediately. And News Nation says they signed on to support it and families of children who have suffered. Now, Chuck Schumer says the bill can change and save lives. Change and save. That's like, what did Barack Obama have back in? He had jobs. He could preserve and create and or save. So anyway, Chuck's just cutting and pasting from the same old. I mean, Chuck's a little worn out himself. I mean, he's just right now, Chuck is focusing on eating the best food possible, drinking the best wine. He doesn't have time to actually craft legislation, for crying out loud. So he's got a team of millennials relying on AI, and they're copying stuff from, we're going to create or save lives. Well, change, say we can't create lives. Change it to, we'll save and change lives is what Chuck will do. That's right. Let's see. The millennial staff and the AI engine in Chuck Schumer's office had help from Richard Blumenthal's similarly functioning apparatus, along with that of Senator Marsha Blackburn, a Republican. So all their millennial teenage AI engine crew, they all worked together with advocacy groups for several years. They've been working to change and save lives for several years just on this one piece of legislation designed to hold companies more responsible for what children see. See, we're not able to actually hold them responsible because we're lawyers and we make a living on irresponsibility. So we're just going to hold them more responsible so that there's some question about whether or not they were responsible enough, and then there can be litigation. Because our job as lawyers is to produce more lawyers and more litigation. So everyone involved here is a lawyer. All right, so they're going to hold companies more responsible, hopefully not too responsible. So I mean, we have to know where to draw the line. And in order to figure out where that line should be drawn, obviously there needs to be a lawsuit. Which this legislation is designed primarily to produce lawsuits. It's not actually designed to protect anyone's children from anything. Let's see. This is from News Nation. I don't even know what that is. News Nation? That sounds like a bubblegum brand that's doing news. News Nation? Really? I don't know. I mean, isn't that like a sports team catchphrase? You know, like Lions Nation or Bronco Nation? Or was there a nation that was actually Orioles Nation? I don't know. But News Nation? Okay. All right. According to News Nation, which is a serious news source, media platforms would have to provide minors with options to protect their information, disable addictive product features, and opt out of personalized algorithmic recommendations. So there's enough words and syllables involved right there to produce 1,000 lawsuits. So all the kids at Chuck Schumer's office and Blumenthal's and Blackburn's office, they'll all get promoted because they've done their job extremely well. Finally, from News Nation, rah, rah, News Nation! Platforms would have to default to the safest settings possible to minors. The idea, Blumenthal and Blackburn have said, is for the platforms to be, quote, safe by design. That's according to two corrupt, perverted lawyers who wouldn't know the truth if it bit them on the face. They wouldn't. If it bit them in the throat, they wouldn't recognize it. So you got a couple of aging perverts, thieves, who've basically steered the ship of state onto the rocks for the better part of 30 years. Corrupt, perverted thieves are now... So if you buy any of this, you're a fool. This is, again, all part of... In fact, I have another story. This is all the lawyers propagating their own ecosystem. And basically scavenging what is left of the body politic like a bunch of vultures. And here, listen to this story from Texas. This is reason number 2103 to get your children out of the government schools. Governor Greg Abbott in Texas has announced a new school safety system that's going to be implemented. It's called Sentinel. That's right. Greg Abbott, in response to the Robb Elementary School massacre in Uvalde. You remember the massacre in Uvalde, Texas? So you might have to try to remember exactly which massacre it was. It was the one in Texas. It was the one where all the cops hid outside of the school while the killer massacred children inside. So in response to that, Governor Greg Abbott has launched a new safety system. So the first thing I thought was, this is the typical government response. Let's overcomplicate closing the door after the horse has left the barn. Let's introduce something so overly complicated and so hysterically out of proportion in response to keep the door of the barn closed, and let's do it right after the horse has left. That's perfect. Greg Abbott, he's a conservative. He's got a new system called Sentinel to bolster school safety standards. Wait, well, what about school safety? Well, let's talk about standards because we can't be held to actually... We're going to raise standards. What else? Sweeping new system to enhance the safety and security of students and teachers. It will expand the state's threat assessments process. Oh, that's encouraging. An enhanced process, new safety standards. These are all intended to better safeguard our children, teachers, and school communities. So I wonder if Greg Abbott realizes that he sounds like a communist when he talks. He sounds like he's giving a speech to the Politburo. I don't think he realizes. In fact, I don't think most people realize that this is a Politburo apparatchik speak. That's what all this is. Because when things are collapsing and going bad all around you and there's bloodshed and children's bodies are being dragged out of the schools, the Politburo has to say something. Or otherwise, people are going to stop and realize that they're actually responsible. So they just keep yakking. Keep yakking there, Greg Abbott. Anyway, that's reason number 2,103 to get your children out of the government schools. Is there's a process and there's standards, and it's not actually that safe, though. Sentinel in Texas, if it works perfectly, will not be 1/100th as effective at protecting your child as homeschooling your child. Homeschooling works every time. And it's not really all that overly complicated. It's pretty hard to mess it up as long as you want your kid to learn how to read and write and do math and be successful. Which most parents do. In fact, that leads me to... I can't do any more of these school stories because it's just so obvious. Let me do the Elon Musk. Speaking of parents who want their children to be successful, I would accept Elon Musk from that. This is from the Can't Buy Me Love file. Javier Musk is Elon Musk's son. Okay, so it's his son, but he now identifies as a girl. And so the folks at AP, they call him her all through this article. His name is Javier. He now dresses up like a girl, takes hormones, and wants to be called... I'm not even going to say it. His name's Javier Musk. He is a twin son of Musk from one of his concubines 10 or 20 years ago. Well, Elon Musk has 12 children, wives and concubines. He's 53. He's one of the wealthiest people in the world, reports AP, as if that's supposed to impress us. Oh, he has stakes in Tesla. He founded SpaceX. He's so great. He's so smart. He's so impressive. Well, his son hates his guts. And his son has now dresses up like a girl and takes hormones and says that his father was never there. He was never supportive. He was rarely present. And he and his siblings had to be cared for by their mother and or by nannies. Javier says his father, Elon, was cold, quick to anger, uncaring, narcissistic. Elon Musk mentioned his son in an interview this past week with Jordan Peterson, streamed live on X. And here's what Musk said about his son, having transitioned into a world of deranged insanity and sexual perversion, by the way. Elon Musk said of his son, Javier, "I lost my son essentially. My son is essentially dead, killed by the woke mind virus," unquote, said Elon Musk about his son. Yeah, that was in a post on X this past Monday. That was during the interview with Jordan Peterson. The Musk's son posted on X that he responded to everything his father was saying. He basically said, "I hate my father. My father's a jerk. He was never around. He never cared about me, and I hate his guts. Oh, and he divorced my mom, and I hate him." Elon Musk says that his son... Elon says he believes his son was born gay and slightly autistic. He says that about his own son, and his son hates him. It's just so terribly sad that the richest man in the world, one of the most esteemed men in the world, is a failure at the most important job in the world. So launching rockets into space, bamboozling governments out of billions of dollars, building electric cars, that's not that important. Civilization would have lurched along without any of that. Elon Musk could have never shown up and built one company. We could function without PayPal. We could function without Tesla. We could function without SpaceX. All of that. You know what we can't function without? Fathers. Responsible fathers who fear God and raise their children to fear God. And in that, Elon Musk is a total failure. He's failed at the most important job in the world. And so I listened to the interview, by the way, but with Elon Musk and Jordan Peterson. Between these two guys, they are the most esteemed, the two of the most esteemed men on the planet right now. Everyone thinks they're great and smart. And I listened to the interview. They sounded to me like a couple of college sophomores trying to impress one another with the breadth of their philosophical reading list and their enlightenment and their ability to name drop. And it's so everyone who's so highly impressed with either one of these guys, I'm going to assume it's only because of your lack of exposure to truly impressive men. That's all. And truly impressive men are in short supply, so you all can be forgiven. But trust me, neither of these guys are all that impressive. That's right, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. And so from there, from Elon Musk and Jordan Peterson and that, and the proverbial death of his son. So from there, I want to go to the actual death of Lucy Blue Knight. Lucy Blue Knight, according to RVM News, passed away at the age of 25 on July 19th. She is the stepdaughter of rock guitarist Slash. And it's reported that she passed away. She didn't pass away. She killed herself at 25 years old. How do we know she killed herself? She set up an auto post to post on Instagram 2 days after she was found dead. And that post said, "I am sorry. Countless missed opportunities and connections due to a disgustingly big ego, insecure heart, and fear of being vulnerable. May my soul learn to evolve from my poor job at being Lucy Blue. Peace." And then she killed herself at 25 years old, having been deluded her entire life by godless parents. I mean, it's possible that a rich girl raised by rich parents in the bubble of Los Angeles could be so isolated and inoculated from the gospel that the only thing she knows about Jesus was what she heard about the Catholics. And it's just so sad. 25 years old to think that your soul might evolve if you kill yourself and you'll become a better person. Is it possible she actually believed that? I think it is. It's just so extraordinarily sad. And so from there, I don't know, what do you do after you report on something like that? There's really nowhere to go. Okay, so I was going to do these stories on the Ten Commandments. And Oklahoma's going to teach the Bible, but I don't. It's hard for me to do that now. So let's go here. NBC News reports that a 12-year-old girl in Tennessee is being charged with murder because she smothered her 8-year-old cousin to death. They had been arguing over an iPhone earlier in the day. A security camera recorded the 12-year-old smothering the 8-year-old to death with a pillow. It's caught on camera. The law enforcement spokesman says it's one of the most disturbing, violent acts my office has prosecuted. And the district attorney says they will petition the judge to prosecute the girl in adult court. I don't even know what to say about that. It's just extraordinarily sad. Meanwhile, from the American Hero File, speaking of courage and persistence and being a person of faith, Bevelyn Beatty Williams has been sentenced to 41 months in prison for blocking the entrance of a New York City abortion mill. 41 months. That's almost 2 years she'll spend in prison for blocking a doorway of an abortion mill in New York City. The U.S. state's attorney for the Southern District of New York, Damien, said, I'm not making that up, his name is Damien.
No way.
Yes. He was part of the prosecuting team, Damien. He says that Bevelyn Beatty Williams repeatedly intimidated and interfered with individuals seeking and providing critical reproductive health services. Uh-huh. There's no reproduction going on in any of those services, but Damien is programmed at the Politburo, and this is the kind of drivel that passes for actual thought. This is passes for an actual statement. By the way, he said that in a press release because Damien did not want to stand in front of cameras and microphones and answer questions about why he's sentencing a Christian girl to 2 years in a brutal, vicious prison for trying to save babies from being murdered and trying to save moms from killing their children. And by the way, this isn't the first time 33-year-old Bevelyn Beatty Williams has crossed swords with Satan at an Atlanta clinic, at an Atlanta abortion mill in 2022. Bevelyn Beatty Williams was said to have screamed through the door at patients attempting to enter the facility until they were forced to leave. She screamed at them and scared them so much that they fled without killing their babies at least that day. Because she screamed at them, condemned them, scared them. She sounded really mean to them. She, in fact, shouted that same day that she would go to jail before she would let patients into the abortion clinic. Okay. That's a woman of faith. That's a woman with courage and persistence. That's a woman that God is using. Bevelyn Beatty Williams says that she received an abortion at the age of 15. And she says, quote, it took a toll on me, unquote. But unlike Donald Trump, Bevelyn Beatty Williams, at some point after committing that sin, asked God for forgiveness. And God has given it to her in spades. And he has encouraged her to do what she... And now she's going to go to prison, which is real prison, where she could be hurt and abused. And it's really terrifying. And one of the most glorious things that could ever happen to a human being is to be thrown in prison for something like this. That's more glorious than the fist pump of Donald Trump. Certainly more courageous. And so we'll pray for her. We'll keep her in our prayers, and I will try to get in contact with her family in some way. Where to go from there? Okay. So let's go to one more from the Can't Buy Me Love file. This is, again, another AP story that comes across my Yahoo feed, my average moron feed. So if you're the average moron in America, which is like 30 to 40% of the population, just falling aimlessly through time and space, concerned with nothing but satisfying your immediate appetites and lusts, and not really paying attention to anything. This is the type of news that you get from People magazine. Vanessa Williams is quietly divorced and says, I'm in love with life and in love with having options. That's the headline. Now, many of you may not remember or even know who Vanessa Williams is. I do. So there's no mention of the scandal that she was when she broke upon the scene. And it was scandalous back then. There's no mention of any of that. There's just a mention of how lovey, 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 wonderful, lovey, happy everything is. So she divorced her husband, her one, two, three. She divorced her third husband a few years ago. And so she sits down with interviewers to tell them how happy she is. And she says, I'm doing what I love, and I am in love with life. There's not one person that I'm in love with, but I'm in love with everybody. Unquote. And then, of course, the reporter doesn't say, well, that's not possible. Are you mentally deranged? We can't print that to say you're in love with everybody. That's not possible. But no, they go along. They say, oh, you, me too. I'm in love with everybody too. Let's everybody just love everybody. That's what we're doing right now. Everybody's just love and loving everybody. It's great. So they print that as if that could have anything to do with reality. And then, I don't know, but do people read that and actually think that could be possibly true? Gee, isn't she a great person? She loves everybody. I mean, she just divorced this guy, but, you know, I mean, she must love him too. That's probably why they got divorced, because she loved him so much. Williams and her latest whatever married in 2015. She was previously married to another guy for about 10 years, which is about right. She had 3 kids, about average. Then after that, after she was discarded by that guy, she was picked up by an NBA star with whom she shares the youngest daughter. While she's sharing with the basketball star, she shares one kid and loves him, of course. She also shares the 3 kids with the other guy who discarded her, and they all love each other. They love each other so much that they don't move in, and So the fact is, when you read this article, the one thing that you should realize, if you have any discernment at all, is that Vanessa Williams is miserable. She's rich and famous and a complete failure at the most important job in the world, the job of wife and mother. That's the most important job in the world, next to father, and I literally mean next to. They go together. The most important job in the world, Vanessa Williams failed at. Now, had Vanessa Williams not made the cover of whatever magazine it was, whenever it was, back when she shocked the world that she could actually be allowed to be on, had she never come along and had her face on a magazine cover, the world would have functioned perfectly well. But the fact that she has failed utterly as a wife and a mother, that has eternal consequences. That really matters. So when it came to being a wife and a mother, it really mattered what Vanessa did, and Vanessa failed. Because she's a selfish, godless heathen. Pretending to be happy and in love with everything. Which is disingenuous and dishonest and not helpful. For all the other narcissists out there who think you're great, you shouldn't be telling them how great everything is. How about come out and say how miserable you are? Tell us the truth, for crying out loud. I hope Vanessa Williams at some point asks God to forgive her for her sins. I hope so. All right. So now I have a story from the Science Maybe file. Uh-huh. Science Maybe. Researchers have analyzed excess all-cause mortality data prior to and during the COVID-19 hysteria. Beginning in March 2020 through May of 2023, that's the entire hysterical pandemic declaration. Excess all-cause mortality rates are incompatible with a pandemic viral respiratory disease as a primary cause of death. So there certainly has been excess mortality, but the study indicates it is incompatible with a viral respiratory disease epidemic. The theory that the virus caused the deaths is propped up, say the authors, by mass virus testing campaigns that should be abandoned. The authors write, we conclude that nothing special would have occurred in terms of mortality had a pandemic not been declared and had the declaration not been acted upon. And so, of course, you say, well, of course you're going to grab that study, Doug. That matches what you said. But what about all the other studies? Well, I'm just putting this study out there This is a study of excess mortality in 125 countries by the Correlation Research in the Public Interest is the group. I don't know who they are. They're not on my payroll. And the University of Quebec at Three Rivers, which is a leftist communist university. So anyway, this is just one of many studies which will be done over the next few years that will tell us what actually happened. And I'm going to predict that this is pretty much what happened. This is pretty much what happened. And, well, time will tell, which I said that in 2020. I said, all you people who think that I'm crazy because I'm telling you this is all a hysterical panic freak out, time is going to tell. And the truth will come out. All right, finally, one more from the Science Really file. That's right. We have, this is from space.com. This is, again, on my average moron feed on my Yahoo email file or Yahoo email homepage there. The headline says, Mercury has a layer of diamond 10 miles thick. NASA spacecraft finds. And that's all the average moron reads. They then go on to the article about Vanessa Williams in People magazine. And they say, wow, Mercury has a layer of diamonds. A spacecraft found it. Ha! Isn't that neat? But then if you actually read the article with some critical thought and discernment, you read the solar system's tiniest planet may be hiding a big secret. Maybe. Oh. Uh-huh. Scientists determined the diamond may lie beneath the crust of Mercury. Mm-hmm. Mercury possesses qualities like a very dark surface, remarkably dense core, and the premature end of Mercury's volcanic era. That's what they report. This is what we know about Mercury. And so out of those three things, there's only one that we actually know, and that's that it has a very dark surface. We don't know anything about the core of Mercury. And we don't know anything about Mercury's volcanic history, not even one thing. So only one out of three things is actually true. Then they go on to say that there are patches of graphite on the surface of Mercury, as if we know that, which we do not know that. And then that graphite led scientists to suggest that in Mercury's early history, there was probably a carbon-rich magma ocean, which would have, of course, floated to the surface, none of which we know to be even remotely possibly true. But it's reported in the article suggests. So they have the qualifying words in there. Anyway, now this process that supposedly produced the carbon-rich magma ocean on the supposed graphite and the graphene and the dark patches. And are you following all this? They say that same process would have also led to what the team behind the findings thinks could be diamond. That's right. A new estimate of the pressure and the knowing that the Mercury is a carbon-rich environment says that not only is there a layer of diamond, but we're even going to say that we think it's about 10 miles thick. Why not? Why not 20 miles? Why not half a mile? So they probably flipped the coin. Well, hey, it's as long as we're going to. All right, so now the authors do say at the very end of the article, they say our study uses geophysical data collected by the NASA Messenger spacecraft. So a spacecraft didn't actually find the diamond. It gathered some geophysical data from which, I don't know, a bunch of college kids sat around and extrapolated and they realized that the future of a successful scientist in the world of old Earth cosmology and Big Bang astronomy rests on being the one able to tell the biggest lie with the straightest face. And so the kids who wrote this, the future, they've got a big future in the industry. All right, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and you for tuning in. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.